You have to live it and you have to believe in it. Going to work for me is not a job.
Bold businesses.
It's been an interesting learning curve.
Do it on the side.
That's what keeps me up at night.
Do it differently.
It is a bit of a risk.
Mate, it was exciting.
Powered by Vodafone.
Hello and welcome to the Bold Businesses podcast. I'm Cara Waters, the small business editor at Fairfax for The Age and Sydney Morning Herald. I get to spend every day talking to businesses about the things that make and break them. Through that work, I've come across some really bold businesses. They're the ones doing things a little bit differently, taking a risk and really putting themselves out there. Over the course of this series, we'll be meeting six bold people who run their own businesses, from a landscape garden designer to a coffee importer turned cafe magnate and a tech whiz whose whole business was inspired by his missing cat. We'll be talking about how they got started and what went wrong along the way, as well as what went right. And we'll be joined by a variety of businesses to share their own tips and tricks on new ways of marketing, cybersecurity, and streamlining the burden of all that paperwork. But today we're going to kick off by meeting graphic designer turned cult cake maker Kat Logan. She's the founder of Buttercream Bakery, which turns over $500,000 a year from just one bricks and mortar store.
Cake rules everything around me. That's our motto in the bakery.
When did you come up with that?
Actually, James, my husband, came up with that, a big Wu-Tang fan. And I think while we were painting the place and he was listening to it, and it's originally Cash Rules Everything Around Me, but...
That was Kat taking us on a tour of her very Instagrammable Sydney Cake Studio, and she's here with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So you've got a great motto, but... Was there a time when you realised the business was about more than just making cakes? Did the Wu-Tang Clan have it right when they said cash rules everything?
No, I think the way we view that is it's about realising that our business has grown to become a brand, even if we didn't consciously set out to do that. It wasn't until people started wanting to work with us, collaborate with us, and bloggers wanted to write about us, and kitchenware companies started to offer us products in exchange for mentions on our social media accounts, that we really started to think of Buttercream as a brand. So with that, we live the phrase, cake rules everything around me. What we try to do is make sure everything we do is in line with this new brand that we've built.
And is your passion for baking a family thing as well?
Yes, actually it all started with my Auntie Grace. She was the local cake maker for all the Filipinos in the area. So I would be out there on the weekends and sitting in her kitchen, bugging her, asking her if I could try this or if I could mix that, until she would eventually let me do it.
How did you get to starting your own business?
I was actually working as a graphic designer. My brother wanted to start his own business, and I was still baking on the side just for family and friends for fun. I wanted to pursue that a little bit more, but I didn't really know anything about running a business. We kind of came together, and he was working in a small business. So he was working for somebody, and he had a bit of behind the scenes knowledge in that. So he said, I can make this business for you if you want to make the products.
How did you start off?
Well, actually, at the time we started, I was about to move out. So my parents were like, yay, another room. And my mom especially was excited because she wanted a walk-in wardrobe. But then my brother and I told them about our business venture and our plan to hopefully build a commercial kitchen in their garage. So they were a bit like, oh, okay. But yeah, they gave us the garage. They were very supportive of us. Basically, we started with zero. We just used a little bit of my brother's savings to build the commercial kitchen. The only big ticket item that we bought was the smallest industrial oven, and everything else was just what I had already. So it was pretty much one of everything. My little hand mixer that my auntie had given me, one mixing bowl, one set of measuring tools, one cupcake tin, but we went for it. We opened an online store, and after every sale we made, we slowly upgraded. We bought another set of cake tins. We bought another kitchen bench, until we eventually had a fully functional commercial kitchen. Once we grew out of that and we needed to expand, we decided to open our storefront in St. Peter's.
How much money do you think you had to put in initially to start things off?
I would have to say just a few thousand just to get the oven and put up the walls and floors in the kitchen. But that was it. The website that we were running was off a free platform at the time. So, and it only cost less than $50 to get the domain hosting.
How did you go about getting the word out there about it?
Well, initially it was just through our immediate network of family and friends. So working in a company, I knew that we always had morning teas that we needed cakes for. So I knew so many people working in different companies, and so did my brother and all my cousins and my auntie. So we asked them to put the word out. So they did.
So tell me about actually moving from being an online business to opening a storefront. And what were the challenges of setting up an actual store?
What we initially planned for was just a place for the customers to come and taste the cakes. At the last minute, we decided to add sandwiches in the window and coffee. That was a very loose and not well-researched plan at all. So what initially started as a 10 sandwiches in the window turned into a full-blown cafe. That was a monster in itself, and we were not ready for it. That was 100% my fault. I think it was my go-with-the-flow attitude. It really failed me this time because we just lost focus. What was happening was there was two very different businesses operating, a cafe and our online cake store. All this good press we were receiving for our painted cakes became negated by the fact that when the customers came into our cafe cake store, there was a disconnect between our online profile that we had built and what they were actually seeing in the store, which was now more sandwiches and coffee.
So how did you salvage things?
We made the tough decision and we closed the cafe. We sold everything in the cafe side and reinvested it into our online business.
So now you've turned the business around from the point where you were really worried about its survival when you first opened the shopfront. How's the business tracking now?
It's going really, really well. Actually, I just had a meeting about this with my partner, actually, and he's going to kill me because I've forgotten the numbers. But he was saying that we're on track for, I think it was 100% growth because we've been able to hire more staff and take on more orders. So we've pretty much doubled our sales.
Well, that's amazing for one storefront and an online business as
yeah.
well. Coming up after a message from our sponsor, we'll sit down with brand strategist Joe Rogers to talk brand tactics. For a business to grow, it needs a great product, passionate people, and the right tools. For Kat's Buttercream Bakery, her tools are her fully equipped kitchen, and one of her most powerful tools is her telco and the support and technology Vodafone provides to help her succeed. As a Vodafone customer, you'll have access to a range of world-leading business apps, like CakeMail, to streamline business processes and help solve the many challenges of running a small business. To start your journey, search Vodafone Business. You're listening to the Bold Business Podcast, and I'm Fairfax Small Business Editor, Cara Waters. We're here talking with Kat Logan about building her cake decorating brand. So, Kat, now you're what people would describe as Instagram famous. We've got Joe Rogers in our Melbourne studio, and he's the chief executive of Melbourne brand strategy agency, The Contenders. Joe's worked with some big name clients over the years across a number of sectors.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Now, we've got a clip of Kat in her kitchen talking about social media that I'll play now. And Joe, I'm interested to know, is this a common story and how can businesses consolidate and build on that Instagram fame?
I actually only got Instagram because I liked the filters and they would make my pictures really pretty in the beginning. And then afterwards, then I just saw this thing that followers, what is that?
What were you doing when you first opened the new shop? Was that just cupcakes?
Oh, we were doing cakes, but just, for lack of a better word, traditional styles, nothing too out of the ordinary. And we were doing well. But once we posted that first photo onto Instagram, which was just for a laugh, because I was really happy with that painted cake I did. The next day we had so many direct messages on Instagram, on Facebook, and emails for people requesting for that cake. And then so we just thought, we're onto something. And we grew from that point. We only had about 1,000 followers. Once we started to
just focus on our painted cakes. We grew from there to, I think now we're on 24,000.
It's a great story. And I think it's really, really interesting as someone who does what I do for a living to look in on Insta-famous stories. The reasons why brands become powerful is that the way that humans actually perceive the world is through being able to notice and comprehend difference. What we see in that is fundamentally is that brands often are built out of this ability for someone to be able to create, capture, or really kind of actually maintain an intangible value. And when we start to think about kind of how humans actually perceive the world, what we look at is something like, for example, the story that's being shared around the fact that it's highly visual, the fact that it's actually picture-based, but actually what it's telling is it's telling a story of difference.
How can small business owners apply that to their business?
For a small business, it's really, really important to create a product that is fundamentally the proof of your story. But I think where a lot of small businesses go wrong is that it's by human nature that we spend disproportionate amount of our time getting our product right. But the product is also proof of a cultural truth. And when we work with smaller scale entrepreneurs, what we spend a lot of time working through with them is around what is the actual cultural truth of their business. And I think it's really, really interesting around that human beings, we have a universal set of what we value. So things like tradition that is really, really apparent in this story. So the fact that it goes back to Kat's grandma and the fact that how this has been passed on from a consumer point of view, the pure indulgence and enjoyment that comes out of being able to really, I guess, you know, eat a product that is, you know, I've been looking at it on screen and I literally wanted to eat my phone. So I think there's something that's really, really beautiful in that. And then there's also a story, I think, about two members of a family coming together and taking a chance. And that really taps into the human truths and cultural truths around self-direction and actually making something of yourself.
What are some of the inherent dangers, Joe, do you think, with branding via social media?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I think social media relies on a couple different things. One is velocity of content and being able to actually produce in a really beautiful way the amount of content that's actually required to keep the story going is one thing that has to be looked at. As as Kat's story scales and as the bakery story scales, the other issue that they'll start to run into is proximity. So from an online store perspective, it becomes difficult when you start to get requests coming through from, for example, where I'm from in Canada. How does that start to work? And how does that actually work with kind of really building a genuine following? So the thing that we speak a lot to clients about is that social media is not free. So yes, the distribution is free, but really what it's doing is fundamentally flipping the content around. So in traditional media, it used to be that you had to pay for the placement, whereas now what you start to see is that we're actually putting more effort in the content, hoping that we'll actually get the media value for free because it's worth sharing.
What about the increasing importance of pay to play in social media? As you said, it's traditionally seen as something that's a free area, but now we're seeing a lot more paid content. Have you tried boosting your content at all, or you're just going organically, Kat?
Oh, no, we actually have tried to boost content specifically around times like Christmas and Valentine's Day when we really want to promote a certain product. And yeah, there is that benefit of having that specific target audience that you can boost your posts to.
And I guess, do you feel that social media is changing in that way as a marketing tool?
Yeah, definitely. It's not just about sending the products and trying to get people to post it for free now. You need to be really specific with when you're placing it and where you're placing it and when you're going to spend money on doing it.
Fundamentally, things like Facebook, Instagram, you know, I'm sure Twitter will have to go this way, is that the business model behind all of those companies is one of placement, is one of pay to play. And what you do start to see, for example, is that organic reach really starts to diminish without some component of actual paid support behind that post to actually get it viewed.
What about working with influencers? How do you go about that, and what's been beneficial about that, Kat?
Well, we recently sent some out to a Sydney influencer because she's a female in her mid-20s, which is definitely our target market, and she has a large following.
And so you're just sending them free product rather than actually paying them to post?
We just send it for free and we say, if you like it, then post it.
Joe, any tips for working with influencers?
Influencing has to be done in the context of your brand and your brand positioning. So understanding that, for example, Kat said a few things there that are really, really important for her to hold on to. One is actually the audience that she's actually speaking with and being as specific as possible around who that actually is. And then looking at that through the lens of that, who else is talking to that audience who actually has influence, who we share a perspective on life with.
Has social media even the playing field for smaller businesses who don't necessarily have money to spend?
Has it leveled the playing field? I guess I would answer that maybe by taking a step backwards. What we really see is that we're moving from an industrial age to an information age. And that's really, really important because the actual ability in the industrial age to compete for a smaller business was really constrained by distribution. Whereas now it's not just social media, but it's actually the information age really allows, for example, when we started our business, we left, you know, a large kind of international brand agency and we started up literally with two laptops, Dropbox. We were able to build a website within 10 minutes and we were able to kind of add in collaborative software. We were able to kind of get going really, really quickly. And so what it does is it actually makes it for smaller business really about the quality of the idea.
I'd have to agree with Joe, and I don't think it's leveled the playing field, but it's given me a foot in the door of the playing field, which probably without social media, I wouldn't have had.
Is it the new word of mouth?
Yeah, I think it is for a small business like ours.
Well, thank you to my guests today, brand strategist expert Joe Rogers and cake painter extraordinaire Kat Logan. I just wanted to finish today with a reminder that there is a market for almost everything, no matter how niche.
What's the strangest thing you've done?
A divorce party.
What did the cake look like for that?
Well, they wanted it to be a little bit messy and bloody. And then we got a special cake topper made of them, the bride and the groom, like just strangling each other. But it was funny because they were both hosting the party together.
Right.
So I think there is a cake for every occasion.
Yeah.
Next week, we talk to coffee importer turned cafe mogul to find out how he manages to innovate and stay relevant in the competitive food industry.
I suppose it's a shock, but if you're going to grow and you're going to go international, I think this is very important.
I'm Cara Waters, and you've been listening to Bold Businesses, powered by Vodafone. Are you ready?